I usually don't record our Wednesday night sessions, but I'd like to record tonight because what we're going to talk about tonight is something that's been on my heart and kind of, God's kind of opened my eyes and it's helped me, and so maybe it'll help somebody else, and so I'd like to try to capture that for folks who can't be here. But if you want to turn your Bibles tonight to 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, we're going to look at, beginning in verse 6. First Timothy chapter 6, beginning in verse 6. And I've titled tonight's lesson, The Problem with Prosperity. The Problem with Prosperity. And to give you a context for us talking about this tonight is, I think we all do it, and it's kind of what Todd was just talking about, that we all kind of get this woe is me mentality, and oh, things are so bad and all this kind of stuff. Everybody in this room is rich. Let's establish that right now. Everybody in this room is rich. We are the richest nation in the not just in the world today. We're the richest nation in the history of mankind going away. I mean, we blow them away. Everybody else. You take number two on that list, multiply it by 10, and we're beyond that. Okay? When you look at the way we live, we have the most conveniences, most comforts, the most abundance ever. We put it this way. How long do you get Solomon? How rich was Solomon?
Pretty rich.
You're in the Old Testament. He had tons and tons, almost literally, of gold. Silver was so abundant in the days of Solomon back in 1000 BC that around 1000 BC that they said silver was like basically like rocks. Like you wouldn't even silver was just basically, it lost its value because gold was so abundant. But let me ask you this. What temperature do you think Solomon kept the palace? You think he sweat in his house? You think he sat in his house and sweat in there in the Middle East, in Palestine? Yeah, he definitely did. Probably, there's probably times inside the palace it was probably 90 degrees. When was the last time your house was 90 degrees? How long did it take Solomon to cook a piece of meat? I bet you it took a lot less than you with your microwave. We have some conveniences today. How quickly could Solomon travel 100 miles? How quickly can every person in this room travel 100 miles? I'm not joking when I say, you're sitting there saying, okay, yeah, we're the richest. I'm as serious as I can possibly be. We're well off. To have a country of 300 million people and basically no one starves to death, with the exception of somebody maybe who's locked in a basement somewhere and somebody's going to jail for that. Okay, that's murder. But you have to actually physically restrain someone and keep them away. You will not see the ribs on people on the side of the road unless they've just chosen that. But food is so abundant, no one starves. 300 million people, no one starves to death. No shortage of food. In fact, we burn it. We literally burn our corn in our gas tanks. That's what ethanol is. We burn corn. Okay? We're fat. Our cattle are fat. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just reality. I tell you what, I'm not going to debate it tonight, but if you think that we're poor today and you want to make that case, I will debate you next Wednesday night. We'll get another podium over here and we'll take turns, and I'll guarantee you, you're going to get your tail kicked. And I don't care how smart you think you are, I'm telling you, we are the richest nation in the history of mankind. We are a nation of kings. We really are kings and queens. I mean, when you look at it, we live better than any Caesar lived. We really do. Just because of the modern convenience. I mean, we're here tonight. You know, it's probably dark outside right now, but I mean, look how well lit this room is. You know, this. You know, you have to take a lot of candles. It takes a lot of work for this to happen. You know, we can work 24/7. You know, there's a guy where I work right now. He's working the night shift. That reactor runs as well at night as it does during the day. You know, that's. I mean, we are really prosperous. Very, very prosperous, okay? So, And I want to say this, physically and spiritually. Here in America, we are really prosperous when it comes to material wealth, but we're also extremely prosperous when it comes to spiritual wealth. You look at the 20th century, guys, we got all the preaching. We got it all. We got all the Bibles. You can't swing a stick without hitting a Bible in the United States. We have tons of Bibles, tons of preaching, tons of churches. Jack Housley, and I love Jack Housley because he wears, just a conversation with Jack, and I'm already like looking for an altar to get on to go repent, because Jack Housley, I mean, he said, you know, he hates it here. I mean, you just pick up a rock, you throw a rock in any direction, you hit a church. I mean, Bibles, I mean, stacked up a mile high, covered in dust, and he's in Papua New Guinea with people begging for the gospel, can't get it. It's hard on him to be here, and every time I talk to him, you know, I walk away, I'm glad I talked to him, but on the other side, I'm kind of sad I talked to him, because I'm thinking, he's exactly right, and that's just the way that it is. And as I think about that, I mean, we are very, very prosperous physically and spiritually. You look at the 20th century, I mean, it's amazing. It really is. Abundance everywhere. That's the point. Okay? And so, like I said, the title of the message, lesson, it may turn into a message, I don't know. The problem with prosperity. So look at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. And let's read over that together here. 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning in verse 6. Paul's writing to Timothy, a young pastor, and he says this, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." Okay. This is one among many. But Scripture repeatedly, Jesus, Paul, Peter, John, I mean, you see this, the writer of Hebrews, they repeatedly talk about the dangers and the warnings of riches. Okay? For the most part, when you read about wealth in the Bible, especially the New Testament, it's typically talked about in a disparaging way, and usually it's coming with a warning. If you actually didn't know what wealth was and you just read through the New Testament, you would think wealth is a bad thing. You'd think money's a bad thing. You'd think riches were a bad thing. And so when you read that, and this is just one example here, I want you to think about the question, why does God give such stern warnings about riches and money? Why does he do that? You know, what's the big deal? And you hear this all the time. You hear this preached about, and I know I've preached on this on numerous occasions here at Marble Hill, and probably need to do it even more, but, you know, what's the big deal? You know, what's God's problem? Why does He want us to be rich? You know, well, what's His problem? Why does He warn us about having riches? And we just talked about earlier, we're all rich. We really are. America, I mean, we're 5% of the world, and we're just by virtue of being American, you're in the top 5% of the world. Generally speaking, you are faring better than 95% of this world. I mean, I want you to think about that, and don't you say, well, yeah, that's the way it is, whatever. You know, I want you to really think about what we're talking about tonight. And so as we're sitting here tonight, really prosperous and really blessed, you know, I want us to think about the question of why does God give such stern warnings about abundance, about riches, about prosperity? Well, I want to give you an illustration tonight. And this isn't just hypothetical. This actually happens, but I think we'll look at it in a hypothetical way tonight. But I'll give you an illustration. I want you to imagine a kid, let's say a little boy that gets a new toy every Saturday. Every Saturday they get a brand new toy. Okay? And they get this setup goes on for years. Let's say from the age of two, which is when, you know, this little tyke is just, you know, just getting aware of his surroundings, he starts getting handed a toy every single Saturday morning without fail. 52 weeks a year, he gets handed a new toy. Let's say this goes on for 5 years, from the age of two until the age of seven. Okay? Is there any problem with that? Besides where to store 260 toys, you know, besides having a toy box as big as this room or whatever. I mean, is there any problem? I mean, what's your problem? Kids get a toy, you know? What are you, a bunch of jerks or something? You don't want kids to have toys? You know? I mean, everybody in the room is saying, yeah, there's a problem with that. What's the problem? Anybody see a problem with that? You don't want children to be happy? What's wrong with you people, you know? What's going to happen here? It's going to become spoiled. You've heard of the term entitlement? You know? What's this kid expecting on Saturday? What happens if it don't show up? It's going to be a bad Saturday for somebody, for mom and dad or whoever. You're going to be spoiled. You're going to be entitled. Where do we stand on thankfulness here, you think? You know, does he think his kids jump up and down every Saturday? There's kids standing at the door like this. Hey, I'm a little bit behind today. Like I said, this is hypothetical, but, you know, the names are withdrawn to protect the innocent because I've seen, maybe not this situation, but I've seen situations similar to this, and that's where we can talk tonight with experience about what can happen. Most likely, you're going to have some unthankfulness, unappreciative, taking things for granted. You think this kid's got a real high value of toys? Man, miss some breaks? I'll have another one on Saturday. I just got to wait three more days. Whatever. Let me ask you this question. Kid's got, let's say, I mean, they just build shelves all over his room. And there's, I mean, this kid somehow's taking care of, these are durable toys, I'd say, and they're all there. What happens if I walk over here and I pick up its toy? Start looking at it. I mean, you'd think that it shouldn't matter at all. You'd think, okay, if I walk off this thing, you got 259 toys, right? But what in reality, what happens? What do you think you're doing? You know, I received that, you know, 100 Saturdays ago, and you can put it back up there. You know what I'm saying? Now, I mean, you're going to probably have a meltdown. And I want you to think about this for just a minute, the mentality of it. The kid should, we already identified, the kid should care less. You got so many toys, you shouldn't give a rip about one toy, whether it comes or goes or whatever, breaks or if it sits right there, you should be completely indifferent. But that's not what happens, is it? What happens is you begin to care more about that toy and something comes into play. And this is just a little illustration, but you know what comes into play? Greed. The more you've got, the more you want. You can start getting into selfishness. Because this is what's so... It doesn't make any sense. But let's say I've seen children who had very little. Do you know what they were very quick to do? They had two toys. I got one, here's yours. That makes no sense. That does not make any sense why it's that way. But it is that way. Okay? Let me ask you another question. This is seemingly unrelated to toys. But if you've seen a kid who fares this way, you know, and growing up as a kid, you know, that's what kid I wanted to be. I want to say, you know, heck, where's my... And I expected a toy every weekend. I was disappointed most weekends. Every time we went to the store, I expected a toy. You just came out crying or made a lip out, you know. But, you know, I wanted this, I expected this, and it didn't happen. But totally unrelated to toys, let's say if you have one of these hypothetical children who get everything that they want, what happens when they stub their toe? They completely melt down. They throw a fit. I can tell you from seeing kids who have very little, they can fall out of a tree and jump up and run off. Why would that be affected by how spoiled you are, how much you have or don't have? Completely unrelated. There's no correlation between the two. You know, you don't fall out of a tree and say, I've got, you know, 260 toys at home, so I'm okay. Or fall out of a tree and say, I've got one toy at home, so I'm upset about it. You know what I'm saying? There's no correlation, but there ends up being a correlation. That when you just have an abundance, it seems like there's a change in your attitude about everything. Does that make sense? You want to help?
You think you're king.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't have to have a scraped knee. You know, I'm very upset about this scraped knee. You know, I don't get scraped knees. That's for somebody else to get. You know, it seems unrelated, but it doesn't make any sense. But it does make sense. We see it, but we can't explain why it is that way. Most of the time, a spoiled kid is a wimp. Is a wuss. Okay, that's what spoiled brats. I'll guarantee you, and I understand this. I'm speaking generally. Okay, I've seen exceptions to both of these, but I would say teachers can pretty much tell, you know, a kid who gets his way all the time or gets things all the time. When they come to school, it's probably the kid who's going to be crying most of the time. You know, going to be irritable and, you know, probably going to fare real well in the lunch line if they're not in the front of the line. You know, they're not going to really understand this. You know, while their food isn't served first and then everybody else eats the way it is at the house. So, I'm not picking them, but what about only children? What about an only child? I know we probably have some only children here who are going to, like, you know, throw something at me. But I'm once again speaking generally. An only child is more prone to feel like I need to be the center here because they're used to being the center. Okay, so you think being the center, that's a great thing, but it can work against you when you don't get to be the center. And so, but as we look at this, let me give you another hypothetical kid. Okay, now we talked about kid number one is not very thankful or appreciative. But let's say you have another kid with the exact same setup. Okay. Toy every Saturday, okay? But this kid is truly thankful, and every single Saturday, this kid says a sincere thank you every Saturday. Now, and they're sincere about it. I mean, they really mean it. They say, man, thank you. This is just what I wanted. Another toy, thanks. I don't know how this kid pulls it off, but they actually have some sincerity, and they're very thankful. And that's much better. But will there be a big difference between that kid and the other kid? I don't think there will be. Because even if you're thankful, if you've got a lot, you still have a tendency to expect a lot. It doesn't change. Even if you're appreciative for it, you can't not feel entitled. And that's very difficult to do. Okay? That's the problem with riches and abundance. That's the problem with prosperity. If I were just drawing from our analogy there, or illustration, let's say the first kid is an American who is not a Christian. They're not thankful, they're not appreciative, they're spoiled. Okay? A lost American, an unsaved person living in America. Kid number two is an American who is a Christian, who is saved. But they're still spoiled. They both have the equal number of toys, they both have a tremendous abundance, and it has a negative effect. As I think about this, and this is what's dawned on me throughout this week, is I'm kid number two. That's me. I'm spoiled. And I'm beginning to feel that more right now than I think I've ever noticed that before. I'm very spoiled.
Spoiled or blessed?
It's spoiled. Now, I'll tell you why in just a second.
See, I agree with you being spoiled, because going to Haiti and seeing everything over there and then coming home, having hot showers, having food on my table that's different that we get to eat, having clothes that I get to wear. Everything that I have here is not over there.
Right.
But they don't care that they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so coming back here, you realize, like I realized, that's where it was an eye-opener for me. I am extremely spoiled.
And like, the difference of what I would say, I think that's the way I feel as well. And the reason I say it's spoiled as opposed to blessed, I mean, God has given it as blessing. But it's turned into me being spoiled, because what I realize is this. I don't have a good attitude a lot of times. I look at the effects in my life and they're negative. I throw temper tantrums. I just want to confess to you that I throw temper tantrums all the time. I'm 34 years old. I'm serious. You talk to Jana, and you'll watch me out in the yard working, and I throw temper tantrums.
Shame on you.
I know. As it turns out, believe it or not, I like to get things my way. And my attitude has a tendency to take a turn if it doesn't work out my way. And I used to make excuses. I used to think, you know, I don't get mad at other people, but I get mad at things. If the weed eater won't start, I throw it across the yard. You know what I'm saying? I'm serious. That's what I do. And I think, well, I'm not throwing it at Jana, so it's okay to throw the weed eater, because I'm just getting a little bit frustrated. I just can't work on things. But you know what I'm finding out is, that's what a spoiled kid does. And I'm looking, as I'm throwing this, I'm thinking, I've seen this. You know, I'm seeing myself in the doorway saying, I've seen this somewhere else before, you know.
You took out my phone number, right? So I fixed that.
Well, because it starts off broke or just flooded, and then it winds up really broke because a 34-year-old throws a temper tantrum. I've been talking to Jana about this. I'm like, what's my problem? Why does it seem like I'm down all the time and stuff? It's because I'm irritable. Because I'm not getting everything my way the way I'm used to getting it. You know, if you take just a little bit of something away from me, I'm just really irritable. I begin to get whiny. You know?
Here, Jordan, take your car back.
No, that's not it. That's the least of it. I notice that I get very irritable, very whiny when something, if it's just hard to do, if I think something should be easy and it winds up being hard, I just absolutely lose it. Okay? That is life. And
I don't like it either.
Well, it's big things and small things, you know what I'm saying? And it's, and the more I think about this, when things don't go my way or when something is hard and I think it should be, I really get a bad attitude, okay? I'm very easily discouraged. A little bit of adversity, I lose all joy. I mean, it is so fragile. I've got lots of joy, but man, it is just hanging on by a thread, because somebody comes by and bumps it, it's gone, and I've now I have a bad day all of a sudden. My day's been ruined because one thing doesn't go right. You know, any kind of adversity, I lose all joy. Okay? I'm easily offended. Easily frustrated. As I'm thinking about this, and it's funny when you think about it, but this is really me. This is what I'm seeing this in myself, and I'm saying, man, and it's not like this is new. It's been there for a while, but things before that I thought, well, it's no big deal. And I'm thinking, it's kind of a big deal. This isn't good. And I'm not alone in this, so we're going to get that in just a second. But I'm responsible for me, so whether I'm alone in it or not, it doesn't make any difference. But I mean, it's funny to think about this, but it's really not—it's not a joke, okay? I need to toughen up, and I need to repent of being a wuss. I mean, that's what it comes down to, and it can be a very serious issue. If I think about the bigger picture of this, okay, I'm kid number two. I do feel like I'm thankful. I'm not as thankful as I should be, but I am thankful for what God's blessed me with. And I am kid number two, but man, that does not change the fact that I'm spoiled and I act like I'm spoiled. Okay? And what I see in the American church, and I mean to offend anyone here, but man, the more I think about it, we're like a bunch of chubby, spoiled brats, you know? And think about this, in the church, we're picky about everything. We are picky about everything, including our church, the church we go to, the singing at our church, the preaching at our church. Everything has to be just right. I'm talking about me here. I get so frustrated when we have an audio problem. That's a temper tantrum. That's not good. And poor old Stephen and Julie are back there. I don't know. We give them nothing to work with. I mean, but it's... I notice that I get so angry if one thing goes wrong. If one thing goes wrong, it can ruin the whole service for me. And you don't think about this, but I'm thinking, why am I so stressed out over a video working or not? Why? Because I'm spoiled. Here's what I expect. This is it. Ready? Get the drum roll. Hit the button and it works. So when I do this, and it doesn't do anything, and there's 150 people or whatever the other Sunday night whenever Jake's video didn't work, hit the button. Doesn't work. Hit the button again. Hit it again. You know, why isn't it working? That's now, what does that look like?
I felt that.
Does this look like the adult class? Or does that look like the beginner's class? That looks like the beginner's class. And I'm saying, and the more I think about this, I'm like, son of a gun, that is really the way that it is. And I was telling Janet, you know, I'm kind of relieved to know this, but I'm kind of, you know, disappointed at the answer, but I'm getting to figure out what my problem is. I'm a spoiled brat. Dang, that's not good. But we notice, you know, we're picky about everything. We complain all the time. Our skin is paper thin. Nobody breathes hard. Or I mean, we, you know, talking about having tough skin or thick skin, our skin in America, and especially in the church in America, is paper thin. Churches split all the time. It would be a stiff competition to figure out the dumbest reason for a church to split. But man, they split all the time. People leave churches all the time. Over what? A dirty look. See ya. I'm out of here. I'm never coming back. That's a spoiled brat. That, you know what I'm saying? But that's what happens. You see that. The average time that a person spends at a church is 7 years. Okay? And that's it. Pat, how long have you been a member of Marble Hill?
Since 64.
Since 64. Okay. So, for every Pat, you've got some people, it's every 6 months. They're going somewhere else. You know why that is? Because it probably takes about that long on average for somebody to get their feelings hurt and they say, I'm done. I'm out of here. You know, the slightest little bit of adversity, slightest little bit of offense, and they're completely out of it. One sermon. You can preach 50 sermons. Good, good, good. Okay, didn't like that one. See you later. I'm out of here. I know people that just quit going to church. I mean, they tell you the reason, and it's hard. It's literally hard to keep a straight face. Because you just say, that's the reason you've not been to church in 20 years? That's spoiled. That's a spoiled brat response to say, I had a bad debt score, I'm dropping out. You know, gosh, that is... But that's the way that it is. This is reality. I'm not exaggerating this a bit. And in the church, I'll put it this way, any reduction in our comforts, and we think we are Job. We think we are Job. We read the book of Job and say, that is exactly my situation. I've lost my job. I've got to sell my house, downsize my house. I'm Job. Okay? And I don't mean suffering. I mean a reduction in our comforts. And when we read the book of Job, in America, we really struggle with the book of Job. I get asked routinely, why did God do that to him? They see God as a villain. They see God as a moral monster when they read the book of Job. And it's like, basically, it's a story of someone who lost everything, but who gave him everything. But I mean, we really In other countries, they don't. I mean, I know people who are teaching through the Old Testament and teaching to people in other lands, and they don't throw up their hands at the Book of Job. But boy, in America, we really struggle with that one. What do you mean, take it? He took all his toys off the wall. Whoa! That's unacceptable. You're supposed to be dropping one off every Saturday. You don't touch the ones you dropped off. Those are ours. You don't come back and get those. You know what I'm saying? That's the mentality. And here's what we're all desiring. We talked about this a few nights ago. We get a toy every week. But that's not enough. We want to win the lottery. I want 20 toys a week. And that's why the lottery goes up to, what did it go up to that last time? $3 billion, $2 billion or something? You know how that builds? Because that's how many people are putting money in. That's why it builds like that. Because nobody wins. They keep putting more money in. That keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. The size of the payout tells you the desire of the people wanting their hands on it. The more people desire it, the bigger it gets. We're over $1 billion. That tells you people really, really want that lottery. They want that money. Because they've been getting one toy a week, or maybe they're really poor and they get one toy a month. And they want 20 toys a week. And you start seeing that and you hear about people, this one guy won 20 toys a week, and you're like, I'm going to buy my ticket. I want that. I need that. So that's kind of where we're at. Okay? I've been reading the past 2 days a Christian missionary biography about Matilda Churchill. She was on the mission field from 1871 to 1916. Okay? She was a missionary in Thailand and in India. The ministry that she and her husband George Churchill started around 1871, they first went to Thailand, which was called Siam, I guess, at the time. That's where I think we get Siamese cat or something like that. But anyway, it was the land of Thailand. They were there for a while, trying to figure out where God wanted them to go. They wound up going to India. They wound up going to Boboli, India. Okay, and they were there from around 1880 to about 1916. That's how long this lady was there. Her husband passed away before that. But they started what is today Irish Grace Ministries. She lived from 1840 to 1925. As I'm reading this biography, it reminds me a lot of William Carey and Adoniram Judson, these different guys. I'm reading this biography. I mean, it's wearing me out. I read about this woman. She's in Thailand. Her husband goes on a trip and he's gone for like 3 months. While he's gone, she gives birth to their first kids. She gives birth to twins. It's a boy and a girl. The girl dies. And the boy lives. And she's writing in this letter thanking God that the boy lived. What do you think about that? Her husband's not there at the time of the delivery. When he comes back, the kid's already like 2 months old, and he finds out that it was twins. They didn't have ultrasounds at this point. Found out that it was twins and that one of them was lost, and they rejoiced that the boy survived. I don't have a category. I mean, that's not the way that I think. I would definitely be focused on the baby that didn't survive. Never opened her eyes. As she's writing this, so they're there on the mission field. It's been her dream, her desire to go to the mission field. She's a Canadian missionary, and she was wearing it out in Canada. She had all kinds of ministries going. She was leading black churches, and tons of people were getting saved. But finally, she got to go to the mission field. And I found out about missionaries is that the majority of them had thriving ministries back at home. And they said, I love this. It's going great. I got to go to the mission field, though. And they go to the mission field. And it's nothing but suffering. They're sick constantly. Every time she writes a letter, she talks about the ailment she's either getting over, she has, or one that she feels like is coming on. She's constantly sick. And you know what she's doing? Constantly praising God for healing and for survival. She's writing letters saying, I'm as sick as I could possibly be. I've got a fever. My son's sick. My husband's sick. But God is preserving us. I'm thinking, that's not the way I would write that. That's not the way I would write that letter with those circumstances. Her husband gets so sick, they have to send him. At this point, they're in India. He has to go to Australia. He's gone for months and months and months and months. While he's gone, she thinks, she doesn't know if he's dead or alive, but she's praying to God for his health, and she's rejoicing. She gets a letter back from him saying he's feeling better. She's just going crazy rejoicing, thanking God for that. She's not pouting because her husband's not there. She's not devastated because her husband's not there. She's sick, her kid's sick. It's just going on constantly, and she's constantly in these letters praising God. A delivery of apples and beans come from Canada, and it's like the heavens have opened up. She is just ecstatic and with exclamation points talking about the apples she's received. I would not last 2 weeks. And when I think about that, literally, I'm not exaggerating. I would not last 2 weeks. I am not as tough as Matilda Churchill. She's much, much tougher than me. I told Jenna, I said, I would be like a 5-year-old little girl with chronic illness on the mission field. I would just be useless. I couldn't do anything. I would go out to chop down a tree to start building. I bet you wouldn't chop down. I'd throw the axe, and you know, we couldn't find it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they said, where'd the axe go? And I'd say, I lost it in the woods. They're like, it's the only one we had. It'll be 6 months before we get another one. We're going to have to dig them up by the roots, you know? I'm not exaggerating. That's the worst part about it. Not at all. I go to India for a week, and I'm on my deathbed with a heat stroke, you know? And I recognize two things. I'm incredibly spoiled, and I am a wimp. I am, just flat out. So, this is the problem that I'm faced with. And I'm driving home in my car at 70 miles an hour with my air conditioner just right and with my MP3 player in so I can listen to what I want to listen to, not what they put on the radio. And I'm thinking, man, this is a problem. But what's the solution? Okay, now this is the tough part. What's the solution? Now I would say, well, be more thankful. But that doesn't really fix it, does it? I mean, I could be super appreciative, but I'm still spoiled. Okay? It doesn't really fix the problem. Now, I could quit my job, take a vow of poverty, become homeless, and that actually might help, okay? But I don't think that's the best answer, okay? So, I want to look at what I think the best answer is. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19, same chapter. So Paul is talking about the dangers of riches, and listen to how he finishes out the letter to Timothy dealing with these rich people in Ephesus that Timothy is dealing with as a pastor, okay? 1 Timothy chapter 6, 17 through 19. Now listen to what it says here. This may be our salvation, not our justification before God, but our salvation from being spoiled. I want you to listen close to this. This is what Paul tells Timothy to tell the rich people at Ephesus, okay? Verse 17. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. So he's saying, you better strive to put your focus on God. And it's hard to do that as a rich person, okay? But he's saying, get centered on God. Don't be puffed up. Don't think I'm better than everybody else. Don't think I'm an American and I'm better than an Indian or I'm better than someone in Papua New Guinea because I'm rich. Don't be high-minded. Don't be boastful or prideful. But have your focus on God, and really, you're going to have to strive to get your focus off the riches of this world and on God. Okay? Verse 18. That they do good. That they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. That means to give or to exchange, okay? Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. You know what Paul's saying there? To us rich people, and it hits me, definitely hits me right between the eyes. He's saying, give it away. He's saying, you take what you need and give it away. Let me give you another analogy real quick, another illustration about our spoiled kid. Gets a toy every Saturday, okay? Kid gets a toy every Saturday. He's unthankful. He's unappreciative. He's spoiled. He takes it for granted. He's entitled. Okay, but let's say that kid's really, really thankful. Okay, that helps. But that really doesn't fix the problem of being spoiled and entitled. But let's say hypothetically, let's say this happens. You tell that kid that has all these toys, you just pull him aside and say, you know, there's a neighborhood right down the road here that has a bunch of kids that have no toys. They don't even have one toy. A bunch of 7-year-old kids, they've never gotten one toy. What do you want to do about that? You know what could really help this kid out? Is for him to go over to that wall and gather up about, what did I say, 260? Gather about 255 toys and go down to that neighborhood and start handing them out. Keep his five favor. Take those 255 and start handing them out. Start worrying about these other kids. Do you think that might help the situation? Do you know what I think could happen? I think as that kid sees other kids and he runs out of toys and there's still kids who don't have toys, do you know what I think that kid might do? He might go to the next kid. One, he has to stop at this house. He's out of toys. He's giving away 255 toys. He might go to the next house and ask that next kid, what do you want? What toy would you like to have? Kid tells them, they go back and they tell whoever it is that's giving them their toy, I have a request. Let's get this one next time. You take that one and you give it away. Do you think that's going to help this kid? I think it would help him tremendously. I think this kid's whole future just changed. And I think that's us. When we talk about giving, tithing, missions, you've heard me say before, God does that for us. It's for our benefit. And you're like, whatever. It really is. It really is. Give money to help those in need, real need, not American need. Not my cable bill is not paid. I mean real need. It makes a big difference. And as I think about this, I'm wanting to do more as an individual. Man, I want to do more. It is like I can do something. And if I'm I need to change my budget at the house, first of all. Me and Jen are starting to eat out a lot less. Okay? I found some room in our budget. Our budget's pretty tight. We've been giving, but we need to give more. Okay? And I'm looking for areas in our budget. You know what's going to happen when I run out of money? You have limited resources. You know what happens when I get my next toy and I give it away and I got to wait 6 days for the next toy? I'm going to get on my knees and start praying, saying, God, I'm out. But what about somebody that has 10 toys a week? Would you put on their heart to help them? And maybe somebody with $100,000 writes a check to India. I'm not saying it's because of my prayer that happened, but somebody had the ability to do that and they just said, I don't give $100,000. I probably will never be able to give that. I can pray for it. I can pray for it diligently, faithfully. To where I can have a little part in that as I'm praying for this ministry, that doors will open up. You know what I'm saying? I want to do more individually, but I also want to do more as a church for everyone involved. We all need this. We really do. Ephesians 4:28, I'm going to say this and we're going to close. Paul's writing and he gives some instruction. He says this. He said, let him that stole steal no more. But let him rather work with his hands that thing which is good. For what purpose? That he may have to give to him that needeth. You see, I don't think that everybody in this room needs to take a vow of poverty and say, I'm just gonna renounce all wealth, that way I won't be spoiled anymore. I think what God wants us to do is to take what we have and begin, as he said there in 1 Timothy 6, start distributing and saying, man, I got a big old pile here. It's more than I need, and this is going to rot. It's going to rot itself and it's going to rot my soul. I want to start distributing this and giving this for their good, for their joy, for my joy, for the glory of God, who's the one who told us what we're talking about tonight. He told us this. Paul didn't tell us this. Timothy didn't. God told us this. He said, you that are rich, I have tremendously blessed you in America. You are incredibly rich. Take the abundance you have. Don't just squander it. But give it to somebody in need, and it's going to tremendously help you and help them, and God gets glorified through it because God puts it upon our heart. Now, I want to say this, and I'll see if anyone has anything we'd like to say tonight. Here's what I realize as I say all this tonight. I'm recording this so that other people can listen to it and so that I can go back and listen to it. Because I forget things. I forget my own messages. I forget my own lessons. And I say, I heard a sermon on that a couple years back. And I preached it, you know, and I'm not doing it, you know. So when I preach, when I teach, I'm talking to Jordan. But I think it helps us all because we're all guilty of the same things for the most part. But identifying this is not fixing this. I've been given a revelation. My eyes are open more to this than they were before. But just being aware of it doesn't mean I fixed it. It's still a problem. I still have an attitude problem. I still need to work on that. And I have a lot of work to do. And I have a very long way to go. Further than anybody in this room realizes. I recognize that. But it's not going to happen overnight, but it can start tonight. That's the way I'm thinking right now is, you know, I pray for God to give me more. I want to get to the point where I completely exhaust my resources. And then I want to pray and say, God, give me more to where I can do more. Give me more time. Give me more energy. Give me more money. Give me whatever I need to where I can do more. But while doing that, I also have to go back and look and say, am I really exhausting my resources or am I wasting my resources? You know what I'm saying? I want to take a much more frugal look at what I'm doing, assess that, and then that could be hindering my prayer. If I'm just flushing it down the toilet, now, I'm not saying live in a hut and just forward your checks to India or to Papua New Guinea or to, you know what I'm saying? You need to live and enjoy your life. You know, I got Netflix. I like having Netflix. I like having TV shows to watch, you know. It's $12 a month. I got to think about this, but I think we're probably going to keep Netflix. We got rid of cable. You know, that was like, I don't know, $100 a month. I'm not going to give you a list. Okay, here's your approved items you can have. You know, but be praying about this and be looking for things. And I'm telling you, I'm not trying to steal your joy. I'm trying to help you have joy. And I want to have joy. And I have an abundance. I mean, you guys... Years ago, and this was completely against my wishes, I definitely appreciated this, but this church helped buy us a storage building. It's completely stocked full of stuff. We have a huge storage building at our house, and I've got so much stuff, my stuff stresses me out. I got to go in there and organize it. It's an American problem. I'm an American problem. I have too much stuff. I walk into my office and I'm like stepping over books to get to my computer. And I told Jan, I said, I've got 500 books in this room. I don't read any of them. I'll bet if I had three, I'd read all three of them all the way through. I'll bet you I hadn't read three books in this room, you know? So I'm just identifying something that I'm dealing with. Hopefully it's a help to you. I don't have all the answers. Don't feel like you can't go out to eat. Don't feel like you can't have cable. Don't feel like you can't, you know. But I want us to be thinking along these lines of saying, man, I think this could really help me. And I know it can help me, and that's why I'm teaching all the time. I'm doing what Paul told Timothy to tell the rich people at Ephesus. I'm telling you, and I'm telling me, you that are rich, charge, you know, God's charging me, saying, Jordan, you got an abundance. Try to get more of an abundance, but give it away. Give it away as fast as you can. And so anyway. Did anyone have anything to say on that before we wrap up tonight? Woe is me. I'm just kidding.